welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levone, your host for an hour of westerns. Later on, Gene Autry's Melody Ranch from 1950. But first, an episode of Have Gun, Will Travel with John Daner starring as Paladin. A CBS broadcast from March 15, 1959, called Death of a Young Gunfighter.
Have much choice left, mister. You can throw your gun away and they'll hang you. Or you can keep it and try to use it on me. Either way, you're going to die.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Let's see.
You're drinking, Mr. Paladin.
Mm.
Oh, hey, boy, bring you brandy.
Mm. Oh, thanks. Set it down.
Yes, sir.
Well, do you want me to read it to you?
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I should think so. Reading over a guest's shoulder is hardly the proper behavior for an Oriental gentleman.
You go?
Go where?
Well, newspapers say. Blood feud rages in New Mexico. 38 men already died. Job for you, Mr. Paladin?
Maybe so, hey boy. We'll see. Violence flared again in Wren Seabree feud when Juan Carlos Morita killed James Seabree in a gunfight. Morita, a notorious killer, had hired his gun to the Wren faction.
Mr. Paladin make money. One side high Morita's gun, other side high Mr. Paladin's gun.
Hey, boy, you've sold me. Guess you better send a wire.
Yes, sir, Mr. Paladin. Right now.
If dandruff dulls your hair, leaves your scalp itchy, please listen. You can get rid of annoying dandruff so fast today, no one should suffer any longer. With Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo.
It was late afternoon when I rode into the New Mexico town, but the summer sun was still merciless, reflecting off the adobe buildings. The dirt street seemed almost deserted. The town was motionless, except for something that swung slowly from a jerry-built scaffold in the middle of the street. It was a hangman's noose, and beneath it lay the body of a dead man.
Raise him. I said get him up.
I never argue with a shotgun.
That's better. This him, Mr. Seabree?
Where till I get a look at him? No, he's not Morita. Let him put his hands down.
You, John Seabree?
That's right.
How long has that body been lying there?
We hung him this morning.
Who is it?
Marita's brother.
And Juan Morita is supposed to come for him. Is that it?
That's it, mister. Now, who are you?
Paladin.
You're late. Let's go inside.
I don't want the job.
You heard of Marita's reputation, mister? It scare you?
It doesn't scare me. I just don't want this job.
I've paid you $500 in advance. You'll give the money back, mister.
Gladly. Here.
You're mighty squeamish for a man with a gun for hire. Morita has killed 9 human beings. To hunt an animal or kill her, you do whatever you have to.
So you leave the brother's body unburied until Morita comes. No thanks, Mr. Seabree. I understand that Morita is a cold-blooded killer. I know he killed your son in a gunfight. There was no contest. I came here to take him for you. But I buried the dead Mr. Seabury. Good day, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
I'd like a room. My horse is outside.
All right, I'll take him to the livery. You staying long, mister?
Just the night. Gonna get a bath?
Well, water's real scarce here, mister. You get a pitcher full and you can do anything you want with it. It's real warm.
I know.
You the gunfighter?
I'm the man Seabury brought in.
Well, Marita killed 9 men, some say more. He needs dying.
Who are you?
Well, my name's Haskell, John Haskell.
You know Marita?
He was born here.
Beyond that, did you know him?
Well, he was a friend of mine. Used to be.
Now you want him dead.
I told you, mister. He needs dying.
The town was still quiet the next morning as I walked across the street to get my horse. One of Seabury's hands was dozing in a chair near the stable door, a shotgun in his lap. As I came out of the sunlight and walked toward the stall, I had a feeling that someone was behind me in the shadows. And I was right.
Mister, is this your fight?
No, it isn't my fight. Are you Marita?
I am Juan Marita, and I will advise you stay inside.
He moved out of the door like a panther. The man in the chair was dead before he could raise a shotgun. Marita caught Seabury's other man as he came lurching onto the street. And then came Mr. Seabury himself. Only this time it was different. Marita's shot only wounded him.
I'll get you next time, Marita. I'll get you.
There will be no next time for you, John Seabury.
Marita!
I thought you said this was not your fight.
You don't kill a man that way.
Stay out of this.
You don't kill him when he's lying on the ground, when he can't reach his gun. I tried to get to him, but I was too late and I was too slow. Before I could draw, Marita swung his gun butt down on my head.
Say, right now, you may have something worth $1,000 to you under the hood of your car and may not even know it. Something worth $1,000 silver dollars. A regular filter check is important to today's cars. So important that Fram Corporation is offering $60,000 in cash to get you to check your filters now.
The trail I followed after Juan Marita was long, hot, and dry. The desert knows how to keep its secrets, and I had been riding for 3 weeks when I finally came to another small adobe town and went in to see the sheriff.
Something I can do for you, mister?
That depends. I'm looking for Juan Marita.
Oh, that's so.
You know him?
Yes, I know him.
By sight?
How long you been after him, mister?
About 3 weeks. Do you know where he is?
I know where he is.
What did he do, mister? Pay you to protect him, or are you just afraid?
How long has it been since you read a paper, mister? Go on, pick it up. Might learn something.
Amnesty. What amnesty?
Read it for yourself.
3 years of violence ended today when a general amnesty was declared in the bloody Wren-Seabury feud in New Mexico. It's true?
Yeah, it's true. Go on, read the rest of it.
The amnesty was called by Major General Thomas Hardy. The involved principals have laid down their arms and taken oaths to keep the peace. General Hardy said anyone breaking the amnesty would be summarily court-martialed and executed. Among those taking the oath was Juan Carlos Marita.
And you don't break the amnesty. It'd start the whole thing up again.
Where is he?
He's on his way home.
To Seabreeze Town?
That's right. Now, you better listen, mister. They mean it about this amnesty. You kill him, you hang. It had to stop somewhere. Let it lie. It's done.
Not quite. Almost, but not quite.
Mister, I know Morita. I respect him. He says he wants to hang up his gun. I believe him. Now give him his chance.
He'll have a chance. The small campfire was nearly out, but there were still embers. The long hunt was coming to an end. One Morita had been there. He couldn't be far away. In fact, at the moment, he was closer than I wanted him to be.
Your gun belt. Let it drop. Be quick. Now turn around so I can see your face. The man who was there with John Seabrook.
I was there. That day when you shot a wounded man in cold blood.
John Seabrook put a rope around my brother's neck. My brother was 18 years old. He did not even shave yet. And John Seabrook let him lie dead in the street.
How many men did your brother kill? Your 18-year-old brother. What do you sell his life for, Morita?
I do not want to kill you.
How many men, Morita?
I do not want to kill again. I do not even know you. I have no hate for you. How much are Seabrook's people paying you? How much am I worth?
No charge. I want you for myself.
But why? I am nothing to you.
You should have made the first shot count. If you'd killed Seabrook with the first shot, I wouldn't have given you a second thought.
You had better stop thinking about me, mister. I am going now. If you follow me, I will kill your horse. Do not make me do that.
You'll have to kill me, too.
I could do that, mister.
Yes, I guess you could. His gun was pointed right at my belly. He could have killed me, but he didn't. He stood there, and he started to tremble. And then, very slowly, his gun hand dropped to his side.
No. No, I will not kill you. I will not kill again. I put my life in your hands. Here, I give you my gun. Mister, I give you $200, all I got. You take me home alive. Don't let anyone lay a gun on me until I get there. A man should die among his people. I will not wear a gun again.
Home for Morita. We had time to get to know each other in the silences and in the times when we talked. Let's rest the horses a minute.
All right.
Ooh, ooh boy.
Paladin?
Yeah?
You think it is possible they will let me come back? You think they can let themselves forget?
I don't know, Morita. Some won't. Some may try, I don't know, but if it were me, I'd ride west. I wouldn't try to go back.
No. No, my people say a man is like a tree. You tear out his roots, he dies. No man wants to die. I have killed 12 men, Paladin. I remember the faces of each of them. I do not forget. You think I have a right to live?
You have a right to try.
A man speaks of death, but he is not sincere. I want to live. I want to get married. You think I'm crazy?
No, Morita. A little optimistic, maybe, but not crazy.
Marie, she's a woman with a tender spirit. I would give my eyes to know that I could grow old together with her. You will see her, Paladin. You will tell me if she's not a woman to behold.
I'm sure she is.
I will not live a week. I will not wear a gun, and I will not live a week. I was an altar boy, and now I have killed 12 men. I cannot forget. And if I cannot, Paladin, can the others?
Then why go back?
To try.
Let's go. Morita was making a good try, and it wasn't easy. There was sullenness and suspicion through the town the day we got back. The hangman's rig still stood in the middle of the street, and there was talk that it was waiting for Morita. But he kept his word. He didn't put on a gun. And on the night of the fiesta, it looked like he might make it.
You see, Paladin? You see my Maria? I told you she is a woman to behold.
You were right, Juan. She's lovely.
The senor is very kind.
And we will marry and we will have children and we will live together until we are old. Is that not so, Maria?
Oh, Juan.
It is so. I drink too much. I talk too much. This is for you, Paladin. You dance with my Maria. I will be back in a little bit.
It will be my pleasure. Maria?
Would you forgive me, Mr. Paladin, if I asked you to come aside with me for a moment? I would like a chance to talk with you.
Always at the service of a pretty woman, Maria.
Gracias. That Juan, tonight he's strong. Tonight he remembers how much we used to love each other. Do you think he will remember tomorrow when he's tired or angry or feels he must kill someone?
I don't speak for him, Maria. Do you love him?
A man like that, if you're a woman, he can stir you. I do not know if I love him anymore, Mr. Paladin. But I do not want to marry him.
And tell him so.
He has killed 12 men, senor. Do you know how simple it would be for him to kill another?
Who?
Another.
No. No more, Maria. The killing is finished. I believe him.
I'm going to marry someone else, Mr. Paladin. He is not a gunfighter. I'm afraid for him.
Tell Juan. He won't strap on a gun. He won't kill this man.
And if he tries?
If he tries, I won't let him.
What is this you will not let someone do, Paladin?
I won't let you put on a gun, Morita.
I give my word. Why should I break it?
I don't think you will.
But Maria, she thinks I will. Is that it? Why, Maria? Why?
Juan.
It is said, Paladin, that only a fool stands between lovers. Why, Maria?
I cannot marry you, Juan.
But I love you.
It is too late. Too much has changed. You have changed.
Another. There is another. While I was away. Who is he, Maria?
I love him, Juan.
I believe you. Tell me his name.
Do not kill him.
His name.
You know my name, Juan.
I know your name, John Haskell. I called you friend. Do you have a gun, friend?
I own one.
In the street, tonight.
Morita.
Do not make me come after you, Haskell. Die big, friend. Maybe she will cry for you.
Morita, you gave me your word.
Maria, she gave me her word too, Mr. Paladin.
And so it was not over after all. There was to be another shooting in another dusty street. And it could only come out one way. Man doesn't learn much about gunfighting working behind a hotel desk. But Haskell wouldn't hide. He came outside the hotel, wearing his gun belt awkwardly. Morita's shot caught him in the shoulder. Then it was up to me. After all, I had also given my word.
Paladin, do not stand in front of him.
You're not going to shoot him again, Morita.
Do not make me kill you. You're not good enough to fight me.
We'll see.
I said it. It seems a long time ago. I do not wish to kill you.
You have a choice, Morita. You can throw away a gun, and they'll hang you for breaking the amnesty. Or you can fight me.
I will not hang.
He lay there in the street, in the shadow of the hangman's rig. Juan Morita had tried, but he couldn't live without his gun. At least he didn't hang.
Your drink, Mr. Paladin?
Hmm?
Hey, boy, bring a brandy.
Oh. Oh, thanks. You set it down.
Yes, sir. Mr. Paladin?
Hmm?
You want hey boy to read paper with you? Find job for you like the last time?
No, hey boy. Not like last time.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, big hero. Stop feud, kill big killer.
No. You're not a hero if you kill a man who wanted you to do it.
What Mr. Paladin mean?
Never mind. Just get me another drink. Gun Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonnell and stars John Daner as Paladin with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Julian Fink and adapted for radio by Marion Clark. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell, Lillian Bayef, Clark Gordon, Lawrence Dobkin, and Barney Phillips. Hugh Douglas speaking. Join us again next week for Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel on Tuned to Yesterday from March 15, 1959, a CBS radio broadcast, which was heard actually a day after the television version of that particular episode, Death of a Gunfighter, was aired on CBS TV with Richard Boone as Paladin. You're listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now another Western star seen on screens of all sizes, Gene Autry and his Melody Ranch next in a CBS episode from September 30th, 1950.
I'm back in the saddle again. Our better friend is a friend. Well, I'm back in the saddle again.
That's right, folks. From New York City, your friendly local merchant who sells and displays healthful, refreshing, delicious Double Mint chewing gum invites you to a visit with all the gang here at Melody Ranch. Johnny Bomb, the Pinafores, the Cass County Boys, Parker Fennelly, Carl Kottner, and yours truly, Charles Stark. But right now, meet the boss man himself, America's favorite cowboy, Gene Autry.
He always sings ragged music to the cattle as he swings back and forward in the saddle on a horse. At a simple beat, while the funny meter makes a roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fellas come, cause the western folks all know he's a highfalutin', shootin', scootin' son of a gun from Arizona, ragtime cowboy Joe.
Out in Arizona where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far is ragtime cowboy Joe. He got his name for singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings the herd to sleep. In a basso rich and deep, crooning soft and low.
He always sings ragged music to the cattle as he sings back and forward in the saddle on a horse. That's a syncopated gait, and there's such a funny meter to the roar of his repeater, how they run when they hear the fellow's gun, cause the western folks all know he's a highfalutin', scootin', shootin' son of a gun from Arizona. Ragtime cowboy, talk about your cowboy, ragtime cowboy Joe. Well, well, thank you a lot there, friends and neighbors. Yes, sir, here it is Saturday night again, and time for our usual Melody Ranch get-together, which means, incidentally, it's the big day in the week for us because we sure do like company. And we like to see all of our guests who have a good time, too. But then I guess we're no different than you folks are in that way. Because when guests come calling at your home, well, you want them to enjoy themselves, too. So let me give you a little hint. Pass around a couple of packages of refreshing, delicious double mint chewing gum. Sweetheart, I'm longing for only you. That's all I do the whole night through. There's such a longing since we're apart. I miss you so inside my heart.
Just run into.
Well, I'll be doggoned if it isn't Caleb Hooten.
Howdy, son.
What in the world are you doing here in New York, old timer?
Oh, just wanderlust, boy. Sheer mad wanderlust.
Well, I'll say one thing. You're sure looking good.
I'm perky as a cowbird wearing a peacock's feathers, son. And you know why?
No, why?
Because ever since I got here, all I've been drinking is that there Texas gopher water.
Texas gopher water?
Yep. Take it for my teeth.
But, Caleb, you've got false teeth.
I know. Every morning I have to go for them. Get it? That's sort of a country joke.
Yeah. You should have left it there, too, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
By the way, Caleb, I was just thinking. I bet you ain't seen many of the sights around the big city yet. So how about going out with me and taking in one of them great big department stores they have here?
Why, I might just do that, Junior. Is it interesting?
Is it interesting? Well, I went into one of them yesterday to buy my gal some nylons, and before I knew it, I was being poked and stabbed and trampled on by 200 women.
That sounds wonderful. What'd you do?
I stood it as long as I could. Then I just lowered my head and started swinging.
Fine thing. Why didn't you act like a gentleman?
I had been acting like a gentleman for an hour. I decided to act like a lady.
Not bad, son. Not very bad. Incidentally, speaking of women, did I tell you boys about the new cow I got?
No, you didn't, old timer. What kind?
Why, I ain't got the vaguest idea, son. I just called her McTavish.
McTavish.
Yeah, and that's where I made my mistake.
Yeah? What happened?
Don't rush me, son. I like to tell this my own way.
I'm sorry. Go right ahead. Take your time.
Much obliged. Anyway, she wouldn't give an ounce of milk.
No.
Finally, it got so bad, I had to call in one of them psychiatrist fellas.
Did he find out what was wrong?
I'll say he did. Seems like the cow heard that her name was McTavish. She thought that thing was a bagpipe, and she wouldn't give a drop. So long, boys. So long.
What goes with me? I hate this living I've chose for me.
Tired of me, misery, should have never roamed.
And left that home cooking.
Home cooking.
Life is cruel, I was a fool to roam.
I climbed this hill, I tried to sail, and then I stepped on a rusty nail.
Never even get no mail. I'm so far from all that goes with
light screen door,
banner from Niagara Falls,
green grass lawnmower,
home sweet home upon the wall. That's
home cooking.
Gonna have me some
home cooking.
Reach and get you some
quiet life.
Quite the life for me. Quiet life is quite the life for me.
Cooking. In fact, I think that we ought to swap recipes like most folks cooks do. And you know, I think that I'll start right off by telling you and all of the folks my own favorite recipe for enjoyment. And that's chewing refreshing, delicious, double mint chewing gum. Sad, I've got the blues. Can't shake the sands of Texas from my shoes. I sigh, I don't know why. I guess I've got those dear old Texas blues. The smell of the rain, the roll of the plane, the feel of my seat in the saddle. I'd give all I own if I could be home, back on the range punching cattle. I guess I'll have the blues till I shake the sands of Texas from my shoes. The smell of the rain, the roll of the plane, the feel of my seat in the saddle. I'd give all I own if I could be home, back on the range punching cattle. I guess I'll have the blues till I shake the sands of Texas from my shoes. Can't shake the sands of Texas from my shoes. Can't shake the sands of Texas from my shoes. Thank you very, very much, gang. I'm glad you liked it.
Like it? I love that there kind of music, sonny boy. In fact, you might say it's prettier than a blue-bellied toad on a lily pad.
You can say that again, Caleb.
Okay, I said it's prettier than a blue-bellied toad.
Never mind.
Oh, on a lily pad. I hate to leave things just hanging there.
I see.
Golly, Gene, ain't it just like old times having Caleb around here again?
Certainly is, Johnny. In fact, you know, I was just kind of thinking here. Remember the first time that we met old Caleb?
Brother. I'll say I do.
Well, don't just stand there, son. Tell the story. Who knows? I might win one of them Oscars.
Well, you might at that, old-timer. But I doubt it very, very much. Anyway, folks, as I remember it now, the Caleb Hooton story all began late one afternoon a few years back. In fact, Johnny and I had just been up in Eagle Pass this particular day, chasing down a few strays. When we happened along a small mountain stream that I'd almost forgotten about. Anyway, sure enough, there in the middle of it was old Caleb, down on his hands and knees, panning for gold.
Hi there, old-timer. How you making out?
Oh, Howdy, howdy, boys. I didn't hear you right up.
Having any luck?
Oh, some good, some bad. Been sloshing a few hunks of gold, but mostly sand. By the way, what you two doing up this way?
Oh, just shagging down a few strays. How long you been up here?
Why, a little over a week now, I guess. Mm-hmm. To a fellow like me, though, time don't mean much. By the way, my name's Hooton. Caleb Hooton.
Oh, I'm Gene Autry. Oh. This is my sidekick, Johnny Bond.
Well, glad to know you, boys.
Same here.
Say, look, old-timer, don't let us interrupt you. We just stopped by to say hello.
Oh, don't be silly, son. My work can wait. Besides, I ain't seen nobody for so long, I'm kind of glad to have the company.
You mean you don't ever get into town?
Not very often, son. But just between us, I kind of think Clarence and me might be heading for level ground pretty soon now. That is, if this ore starts panning out the way I think it's going to.
Clarence? Who's Clarence?
Oh, I forgot. You fellas ain't never met my mule, have you? He's the only living relative I got left. Clarence, this here's Gene and Johnny.
Well, glad to know you, Clarence.
Yeah, same here. Say, look, old-timer, just got an idea. How'd you like a good old-fashioned home-cooked meal for a change?
Mister, if you just said what I thought you just said, my answer is three words. Yes, and how soon?
Okay, how about tonight? That is, if you like Mulligan's stew.
Oh, can't stand it. What time do you want me there?
6 o'clock, all right.
Son, you just made yourself a deal. Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask. Where's your place?
5 miles due west of town, on the Ridge Rock Road. You know where that is?
No, but I know where town is. And from there on, me and Clarence, we'll just follow the smell of home-cooked Mulligan stew.
And so, folks, the Caleb Hooton story all began just as simple as that. But when 6:30 rolled around, without the old-timer showing up, I began wondering what had happened to him. Maybe he had just gotten a late start, or maybe he just plain couldn't find the place. At any rate, I knew one thing, that he wouldn't have stood us up if he could help it. Anyway, at 8 o'clock, I had the rest of the boys go ahead with dinner. But instead of sitting down with them, I just had a hunch. I headed for town and the county claims office.
Hey, Wally. Wally, open up. It's me. Gene Autry.
What in tarnation do you want at this time of night?
Sorry to get you out of bed, Wally, but...
Can't I wait till tomorrow?
No, I need some information. It's kind of important.
Okay. Come on in.
Thanks.
Fellas like you make fellas like me wish we were rich enough to own a house instead of sleeping in the same place we work.
I said I was sorry, didn't I?
I'm only kidding. Just let me get on this rope. Okay, follow me and watch yourself. It's dark through this hall. Now, where do I switch on this light? There we are. Okay, now, what do you want to know?
Well, I'm checking on an old man named Caleb Hooton, Wally. He wasn't in here this afternoon by any chance, was he?
What? You mean you had me get out of bed and come all the way in here just ask me that?
I told you it was important.
Okay, so it's important. The answer's still no. Only had two people come in all day, and neither one of them had a name that sounded anything like what you just said.
All right, all right. In that case, then, how about checking on a piece of property up in Eagle Pass section for me?
Look, Gene Autry, will you please tell me what you're trying to prove?
I just want to find out if a certain section up on Sandy Creek has ever been laid claim to, that's all.
Whereabouts in Sandy Creek?
Oh, just below the rapids. Maybe a quarter of a mile.
Well, that shouldn't be too hard to check on. Here, let's take a look at this map. Now then, you say it's just about here, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, that's section 34J. Now then, wait till I see what the files show. 18, 26, 32, 33. Here it is. 34J.
Good. What does it say about it? It
says, claim staked and filed by Eli Holland, September 9, 1944.
Well, guess that's that. Sorry to have bothered you, Wally.
Oh, think nothing of it. I love getting up in the middle of the night.
Well,
I'd found out up to now was that the old-timer had been prospecting on land that he couldn't have claimed anyway. And then I got to thinking, maybe he'd just decided to pack up and move on. But I still wasn't convinced in my own mind. So the next morning, I saddled up Champion again and headed towards Sandy Creek for another look around. Oh, boy. Well, Champ, hold it a minute, boy. I'll just get off here and do a little checking over on that rig.
You looking for something, mister?
Huh? Oh, howdy, mister. Didn't know there was anybody else around.
I asked you a question.
Oh, yeah. Why, I'm looking for an old prospector by the name of Caleb Hooten. Haven't seen him around here, have you?
He's gone, said he's going to visit his brother. Anything else you want to know?
Didn't leave any message, did he?
Look, mister, I don't know nothing about any message, but in just case you don't know it, this is private property. So if you're smart, you'll clear out and leave well enough alone.
So that's the way it is, huh?
Yes, that's the way it is. So beat it.
Well, thank you, my friend. I'll beat it like you say. But don't take any bets that I won't be back. Now, I knew something was fishy, because the old-timer had told me right on that very same spot that he didn't have any family left in the world. That being the case, he couldn't very well have gone to visit his brother. And then all of a sudden, the answer to the whole thing hit me like a jolt of rope around a calf's neck. Yes, sir, from here on, it was just a matter of setting a little trap with the right piece of cheese. And since Johnny Bond was new around these parts, I decided that he was the best piece of cheese that I could find.
Hey, Mr. Barnes, quick. I want to stake a claim.
Sounds like you hit it good, young fella. Wait till I get my book.
Okay, but hurry it up, will you? I don't want nothing to happen.
Don't worry, Mr.
Bond, Johnny Bond.
All right. Now, first, where is this property? You want the claim located?
Over at the south end of Big Snake Creek. Just this side of Johansson's Mill. You know where it is.
Okay, according to the map, that's section 107 and 108L. I just told her a second. I want to check the claims file.
Right. Boy, this sure is my lucky day. Only been in these ports less than a week now, and already I hit it big. Found an ounce and a half of gold out there in no time at all. Could have got more, but wanted to get down here as fast as I could, stake out my claim, you know.
Well, looks like you're still in luck, Mr. Bond. Just sign this paper right here, and the land's yours.
Okay. Right there. Anything else?
Not a thing.
In that case, shake hands with a millionaire, buddy, and have a cigar.
Now the piece of cheese was in the trap, and all we had to do was wait for the rat. So just as we'd planned, Johnny went back to Big Snake Creek and pitched camp. When he got there, it was just after dark. The sky had started to cloud over, and a little bit it looked like rain. All of which only made Johnny even more scared than he was already.
Oh, me. Why did I ever get into... Who's that? Must have been the wind.
Good evening, Mr. Bond.
Who are you?
You mean you don't recognize me? There. That better?
Mr. Burns, what are you doing up here?
I collect gold for a hobby. I thought you might have some you could spare.
Okay, all right, but what are you pointing that gun at me for?
Oh, didn't I tell you? I'm sorry. You see, I think it's important to point your gun at a man when you intend to kill him. Don't you?
Oh, sure. What did you say?
Forget it. Just start saying your prayers, cause...
My hand.
All right, you're lucky that it wasn't worse than that, Burns. Should I say Mr. Eli Holland?
I don't know what you're talking about. Besides, you can't prove a thing.
Well, we'll see about that. Time up, Johnny.
Wait a minute. Ain't you even gonna thank me?
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Thanks for being my piece of cheese.
Think nothing of it, old pal. Just one little thing.
What's that?
Another 2 seconds and your piece of cheese would have been Swiss cheese.
And so, folks, that's the end of the Caleb Hooten story.
Boy, that Eli Holland feller really had himself quite a little racket, didn't he, Gene?
I'll say he did, Johnny. You see, folks,
By using his job at the recorder's office, he could issue claims to prospectors who hit rich strikes. Then, as soon as they left, he tore up their claims and made out new predated ones to Eli Holland, which was his real name. After that, well, he'd just do away with the prospector, and nobody was any the wiser.
Hey, I forgot to ask you.
What's that?
What made you suspicious of him in the first place?
A date, Johnny. A sample date on that claim that he showed me the first night I was there. It said, filed by Eli Holland, September 9th, 1944.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Nothing, except afterwards I got thinking about it and remembered a little story. You see, September 9th is admission day in this state, and no government offices open because of a holiday.
Well, I'll be...
That ain't all of the story, though, son.
It ain't?
No, sirree, not by a long shot. You see, all the time you fellas thought I was a garter, I was really tied to a tree. And coming towards me were 65 cougars, 38 mountain lions, and 3 wild boars carrying submachine guns. Anyway, all I had with me was a slingshot and an old emery board.
That's all, brother. Good night, Caleb. Here's a mighty pretty tune that many a cowboy has seen as well as heard. For nestled in the canyon somewhere high in the Rockies is a place where the sands of time sing a song that you never forget. The name of the place, Alamosa, the song, well, it goes like this. The singing sands of Alamosa sang tenderly the night that we found love was ours. Deep in the sands of Alamosa, the angels hid a song amid the desert flowers. But since you said goodbye, there's no music, just the ghost of a song that used to be. The singing sounds of Alamosa will sing anew the day that you come back to me. But since you said goodbye, there's no music, just the ghost of a song that you the singing sounds of Alamosa will sing anew the day that you come to me.
That was beautiful music, so soothing and relaxing. Kind of gives me a new lease on life.
Well, I'll tell you, Charlie, music can do that all right. And you know, I've found that chewing refreshing double mint gum is a swell help treat, too. Friends, looks like we've used up the last of the batter this Saturday night. But me and the whole Melody Ranch gang will be back to mix up a new batch for you next week at the same time and over these same CBS stations. So try and drop around then, won't you? In the meantime, this is Gene Autry for Double Mint Gum, asking you to keep thinking of us.
until we're back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle feed on the lowly Jimson weed, I'm back in the saddle again.
Yes, folks, be sure to join us again next week at the same time on the same station. And the Wrigley people will again present Gene Autry, who may now be seen in his new Columbia picture, Indian Territory. This is Charles Stark speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Gene Autry's Melody Ranch, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 30th of September, 1950 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.